Well, tonight, thank you for being here. We're in Framework. We're continuing through the Old Testament. We're beginning in the year 110 BC, hoping to get up to the year 721 BC, going through the northern 10 tribes of Israel. I've got a lot of things to go through. It's going to go from the time of David up until the fall of the northern tribes of Israel. In your Framework book, it's page 107 to 119. If you look on the home page of Generation Word, there it says right there, it says Framework or the Framework book. You click on that, you can see it or find it where it talks about resources. And I'll be flipping through that and several pictures. But what has taken place so far, we've gone, I don't know if this is our fourth night in the Old Testament, I'm not sure. But what we talked about last week was the time of the judges leading up to Saul as the king of Israel, the first king. This was a time of chaos. The best word, best phrase in the book of Judges is each man did what he wanted, what was right in his own heart, because there was no king in Israel. But yet God says, I'll be your king. You don't need a king. They want a king, so they choose Saul. Saul becomes proud, makes several mistakes, and God rejects him as king. And then he is finally, again, there's all kinds of stories. I have a hard time doing this. I want to tell you all the stories and read through the Bible, read through the text. But now we're into a 10-year program as we teach verse by verse through the Old Testament. So I'm going to try to do an overview. Saul is rejected as king, and he ends up being injured by the Philistines on Mount Gilboa, where he ends up taking his life, it appears. And when he dies, they come down to get David, who's in Ziklag. He'd gone over and was living with the Philistines because Saul was trying to kill David. Finally, he just went over and lived with the Philistines, and they gave him a city called Ziklag, and that was his town. And they tell David that Saul is dead, and Saul then moves to Hebron and becomes the king of the tribe of Judah, the tribe of Benjamin. And, of course, Simeon is living in the land of Judah at that time. So he becomes that would be called the tribe or the nation, the kingdom of Judah. In the north, northern Israel, they've lost their king. Jonathan, David's friend, Saul's son, is dead in the same battle. But the general's name is Abner. And the son that is still alive is Ishbosheth. And Ishbosheth and Abner, they continue to lead the people of Israel because they want to stay as a nation for a time period. And after David moves to Hebron and makes that his capital, but after 7.5 years, Ishbosheth is assassinated. And someone thinks they're doing a big favor for David, and they bring Ishbosheth's head to David, and David then has that person executed. And the tribes come down, the northern tribes come down, and ask David if he will be their king. And that is what you see there on page 107, just kind of the details taking place right there on page 107. And David then accepts it, and he begins reigning. In 110, he's going to reign until about 970 BC. And the first thing he does then, after they come down and make him king, is he's been ruling in the city of Hebron, of the southern tribe of Judah, for 7.5 years. He now ends up moving up to, well, here's a battle that takes place between there's a civil war takes place as they try to fight it out. Who's going to take it? There's a brief civil war. And then David ends up coming up to Salem, the Jebusite city of Salem, and taking the city of Salem in a battle, and is going to make Salem or Jerusalem the capital city. It's right there on the border. It's right there. Benjamin is right there beside it, and it's a more of a central location. One of the things that had taken place in the book of Judges was the tabernacle. The tabernacle had been burnt by the Philistines. Remember, the Ark of the Covenant had been captured and taken to the Philistines. They pass it through five cities, and they eventually sent it back. It ends up at Beth Shemesh in the valley there, and then goes through the house of Hinnom. I'll show, well, right here. It carried off the dream at Abinadab's house. And I'll show you some pictures of that here in just a moment. But the tabernacle had been burnt. So there is no longer a tabernacle at Shiloh. There's pieces left over, and they seem like they reconstruct at a very high mountain right here, of high place of Gibeah, just north of Jerusalem. I'm going to show you some pictures. They set up the Ark of the Covenant there at Kiriath Jearim, and then eventually at Obed-Edom's house. And that is where the Ark of the Covenant sits during this time until David moves to Jerusalem, and then he has the Ark of the Covenant moved into Jerusalem. And so that's where the Ark of the Covenant has been during this time. Here is the city of Jerusalem. I'm going to show you several pictures just to rush through this. This picture here you can see is Jerusalem here, but going down this hill, this is the city of David. So this picture on the wall right here is up in this part, the northern part. It's Mount Moriah. It's where the Dome of the Rock sits. In fact, right here, the Dome of the Rock in this picture is sitting right here on that open, exposed rock. It's north of the city of David. It's Jerusalem, but this is called Salem, and David's going to call it Jerusalem. He's going to make that his capital. He's going to build his palace right here. We'll look at this. He's eventually going to buy this. This is a threshing floor. He's going to buy this, and that's where Solomon's going to build the temple. But there is the city of Jabesh that's going to become Jerusalem. Here's the south. Here's the Kidron Valley running here. There's a natural spring of water right here. It's still bubbling out of the ground today. I've walked through it 5 or 6 times. And that provides water to the city. That's one of the reasons why it was built here. This is where Melchizedek lived, was king. Melchizedek was king of the city. This is where Abraham and him met after Abraham came back from defeating the kings. And this is where Abraham offered Isaac on, went to this place, Mount Moriah. It says right in the book of Genesis, this is where he offered Isaac. The palace is going to be built right here. I want you to notice this wall right here, the stone wall. This is just a model, but that is a Jebusite step structure that's left over from the Jebusite time. David's going to build his palace up in this area. And here's some pictures very quickly of Jerusalem. Here is a nice view of the city of David. There's that, the Gihon Springs I talked about. That's where the palace is at. There's the Kidron Valley. Going north, there's Mount Moriah, where the temple's going to stand. To the north of that is a sheep pool, or another natural spring of water. That's going to become the Pool of Bethesda. It's 4 pools in the book of in the Gospels. There's a valley here. There's a hook valley. It hooks around here, the Hinnom Valley. And then there's a central valley, which is hard to see except today, except is some a little bit of a dip in the terrain because it's been filled in. This is Mount Zion over here, and here's another pool. But there's Mount Moriah where the temple's going to go. So what's important? City of David, Kidron Valley, Mount of Olives over here, and to the north of this little city of David is Mount Moriah. Today, this is all part of Jerusalem. This is 1000 BC. There's the city looking from the south. Again, that's a little drawing of it. Here's another picture. There is David's palace. We're going to look at that. Here's the Gihon Springs. Eventually, there's going to be a tunnel. Hezekiah is going to cut a tunnel. Because of the Assyrians, he's going to cut a tunnel through the rock this way, and then it'll meet this way. They'll meet in the middle, and the water will flow and still flows under the city, under this old city of David, in bedrock, and flows into the Pool of Siloam, also mentioned in the New Testament. That's called Hezekiah's Tunnel. But anyway, we're interested in the Gihon Springs. And that's just another view of... Now, Joab's going to take this city from the Jebusites. He's going to use the Gihon Springs, come in and crawl up into the city and open the gates up. That's all David. There's another view of the city of David. Here's the city of David, Gihon Springs. There's the rise called the Ophel to Mount Moriah. Mount of Olives is over here. The Western Ridge is over here, the Hinnom Valley. And then there's the pool, Sheep's Pool. Here's another picture. I took this picture. We went south of the city and took a picture looking back into Jerusalem. This is the city of David right here. There's the Kidron Valley. This is the city of David. There's the Temple Mount, Mount Moriah, Central Valley, Western Ridge over here, and then the Hinnom Valley right here cuts across here and meets with the Kidron Valley coming down the Mount of Olives. So that's a picture giving the same topography we've looked at. Now, right here in the city of David, where David's city was at that he took with the Gihon Springs right here, this is the Jebusite wall. Now we're in the Kidron, we're on the Mount of Olives actually looking across the Kidron Valley, and that is the remains of a Canaanite wall. A Canaanite wall, a retaining wall holding, and buildings were up here, all along here. There's houses all along here, and the Gihon Springs is down here. So this is getting very close to, well, the city of David and the palace. This is a close-up of that same Canaanite wall, the Jebusite wall. There's a more of a square structure, probably built more like in Nehemiah's time up against it. Up in here would be on the top. This is where David's palace is going to be built up on top of that. This is a royal palace. Now we're inside looking out over the Kidron Valley with the Jebusite wall down here. And this would be part of a royal palace, apparently, from David's time. This could be David's palace. In fact, archaeologist, what's her name? Mazur. Eliot Mazur, she believes for sure this is David's palace, and they've excavated. There's another picture. Now I've got my back against the Kidron Valley looking into the David's palace, and you can see the walls, and there's stuff in the ground, things carved in the ground here, like where, you know, whatever structures were held up inside there, you know. But that is inside of what David's palace would have been. Now we're looking in David's palace out down the slope into the Kidron Valley. This is a modern city today, that's people are living in there. But this would be where David's looking down out of his window or on top of his palace, looking down, and he can see the other houses, which is going to get him in trouble with Bathsheba. And now we're looking straight down into the Kidron Valley. So you see how deep the Kidron Valley is on the, it's like this picture, I'm standing on the Mount of Olives looking over the Kidron Valley at the Mount Moriah. David's city, the city of David, is down here. So a lot of times people call Bethlehem the city of David because that's where he came from, but this was the city of David because he took it, and there I am standing in front of that Jebusite wall, possibly some structure by Nehemiah and his people there going down in the Kidron Valley. Now right here, there's a house called the House of a Hill. Right here you see the walls that were built up against the Jebusite. So this would be a structure, and there's people. This right here, that's a toilet right there. That's a toilet from probably, you know, 1200, 1400 BC, that was part of that structure that was left there. This is just some more details of that. This is going down into the Gihon Springs. There's a Canaanite tunnel that ran water. This was dug up by the Canaanites. This goes down. If you go down right in here, you're going to walk right into the water that's bubbling through there. And then that leads, there's some water. Now you're heading through Hezekiah's tunnel underneath the city of David. Anyway, I just wanted to show you that because that's what you see right there. On your notes on page 108, the first thing it just says in the first paragraph, there's a picture, of course, of that Jebusite wall. David, first of all, he defeated the Philistines. He's going to finish the work that Joshua started, and the people of Judges never got it done. So he's going to eventually defeat the Philistines, eliminate them as a threat. He'll conquer all the Canaanites and cities that still had strongholds like Beth Shan, Megiddo, Dor. Those are up in northern Israel, northern 10 tribes, and they'll be subdued. He'll also defeat to the east and to the south, the Moabites and the Edomites and the Ammonites, and then to the north, the Arameans. And that's where this leads you to right here. The Arameans were up here, and this is going to be important. The Assyrians are going to be coming from up in this area. The Arameans are up in this area. Well, where Abraham, where Isaac went to get a wife, where, you know, Abraham sent his servant, and where Jacob went and spent time with Laban. This is now the Assyrians up here. These are the Syrians. These are the Assyrians. And they'll have trouble with that. Damascus will be part of that. But David at this time, from the Gulf of Aqaba up to the southern part of this is called the River of Egypt. That's not the Nile, but that's called the River of Egypt. That's the border. That's the southern border of Philistia. Then all the way up to the Euphrates River, he conquered all of this, taking under his control the Edomites, the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Arameans, which are the Syrians. He conquered up to Lebanon, but left that, you know, for them. But this is what David conquered during his lifetime. There's all, and that's going to be in 2 Samuel 8, and stories continue to be given in there. One of his problems, well, let's see what else we got on here. Here's the good things that he does on page 108. In the area of spiritual worship, David advanced Yahweh worship. One, he conquered Jerusalem. So he's got Mount Moriah where the temple's going to be built, the place that God told Abraham to go offer Isaac. He brings the ark into Jerusalem for Kirioth Jearim. It was at the high place of Geba, and I'll show you that here in a moment. I'll show you some pictures. It's a high place north of Jerusalem. He brings it into the tent of David, which is like a tabernacle there. You know, he has just a place for the ark to set. Oh, wait, that's the next point. Prepare the tent for the Ark of the Covenant. which is not the tabernacle. He established the priestly line of Aaron through the priests Zadok and Abiathar. He established the priesthood and divided the Levites into divisions that would rotate. So now the Levites are going to be living throughout the land of Israel, but they'll have a month or so, 2 weeks or so, that they'll come and serve. And that's where you see, like, when John the Baptist was born, it was his father, what's his name? Eliezer, but John the Baptist's father, Elizabeth and Zechariah. Zechariah was, it was his turn, his 2 weeks there of serving in the temple, and his name was drawn by Lot to go in and offer the incense on the altar. That's where the angel appeared to him. But he wasn't there every day. He followed the rotation that was set up by David for the priests and Levites, so they would all have a chance to come and serve in what is going to become the temple that his son's going to build, Solomon. He assigned the Levites, appointed singers and musicians, so he starts the bands in the temple worship. The services were conducted before the ark there in Jerusalem in the city of David, in front of the tent. David made elaborate plans, God-directed plans for the tabernacle, the temple that's going to be built. He wanted to build the temple, but God told him, it's not for you to build, you're a man of war. Your son is going to build the temple because he's going to be the man of peace. And then so his son Solomon is going to inherit a kingdom of peace. David eventually purchased the land, the threshing floor from Aruna, the Jebusite, just like the city of David came from the Jebusites, the Temple Mount came, this right here, the Temple Mount, Mount Moriah. He purchased that threshing floor because up until that time, that was just a bare rock, a high place where they could thresh their grain. Going to page 109, David also faced many struggles. He had an adulterous relationship. He had a revolt by his son Absalom, who actually murdered one of his other sons, which led to a civil war. And then David eventually counts his fighting men. He wants to find out, take a sense of how many military do I have, and God doesn't want him. His general Joab told him, I don't think you should do this, but David wanted to, and then God was angry with him. And there ended up having 70,000 people killed because of it, because David took a sense. He wanted to know how many people he had. He handed off a kingdom to Solomon that was peaceful. And Solomon was going to reign then from 970 to 930. Solomon is going to now begin to reign in Jerusalem and do several things. And now we can see that bottom of page 109, there's a little diagram, a schematic drawing of the city of David. And again, remember, Mount Moriah is part of Jerusalem. Now, turn the page, and you're going to have Solomon. Let's see what we got here for pictures. This is reviewing David. David is having war over here with the Amorites, and General Joab was over there, and he saw Bathsheba looking down. He saw Bathsheba, a beautiful woman, showering or taking a bath from on top of her house, and David could see her. So he sends for her. She is the wife of Uriah the Hittite, and he sends a message over here because Uriah is fighting with Joab, a great soldier, faithful servant of David, and says, put him in the front line and then attack the city, but then retreat. And then, of course, he got shot up with arrows. He comes back and says, Uriah is dead. So then he sends for Bathsheba and says, will you marry me? Well, of course, because he'd already sent for her, he was in trouble because she was pregnant. And she's going to eventually give birth to Solomon, which, again, what a twisted story. The woman that David murders to have, that he sleeps with while she's still married before her husband dies, gets pregnant, they lose that child, she eventually conceives another child, and that's Solomon. And just, again, if you want to talk about grace or how God works. Anyway, this is Absalom, David's son, killing Amnon. He has to flee and come up here and live in Geshur, where his grandfather's at. And eventually that's going to lead to a civil war. I mentioned all these things. You want to read all these. There's going to also be a revolt by Sheba. It's going to lead a revolt. David's going to have to fight his way through that. Those are revolts from his own people. This is where he counts his fighting men. He sends Joab out, and Joab just marches through the country and takes a census of all the fighting men and comes back. And then that's where the tabernacle of Moses is right there at Gibeon. I'm going to show you pictures of Gibeon. That's north of Jerusalem. The ark is in Jerusalem. But this is where he sees the angel of the Lord coming to strike Jerusalem, and he offers a sacrifice on Mount Moriah, and the angel of the Lord stops. And that's why he purchases that from the Jebusite, and that becomes the Temple Mount. Now, This is Jerusalem and that part of the city of David. Just like 5 miles south is Bethlehem. David originally started reigning in Hebron. So he's born in Bethlehem, grows up in Bethlehem, shepherd flocks around Bethlehem. He comes back and begins ruling in Hebron, takes Jabesh, becomes Jerusalem. But the Ark of the Covenant had been brought to a high place of Geba right here. This is where Samuel is born at Mizpah. Saul comes from Gibeah. But right here at high place of Gibeah is where the Ark of the Covenant was at, and they have what's remains of the tabernacle is sitting there, you know, a makeshift during Solomon's time. And you can go there. I've stood up there on top before. It's hard to look at anything because the like the Crusaders and things built all kinds of stuff. There's buildings, and it's hard to see and get a perspective like we could like the Jebusite city. But here's a perspective of, I got some pictures of it. Here it is. This is at the high place of Gibeon right here, where high place of Gibeon right here, just north of Jerusalem. Again, Samuel's buried there. The ark was there. What remained of the ark was there. Samuel was born here. Samuel is buried here. Saul was born here, and this was his home. The Ark of the Covenant was set up there in some kind of makeshift tabernacle, because this is where Solomon, David's son, is going to go when he goes before the Lord and offers all kinds of sacrifices and asks, God says, what do you want? And he says, I want wisdom. That's going to take place right here when he offers all those animal sacrifices when he becomes king. Anyway, that high place of Gibeah is right here. You see some remains and things here. But you're looking south, down into Jerusalem. There's the Temple Mount right there that you can see there where the temple stood. There is the Mount of Olives, and there's three peaks of the Mount of Olives. Then in between, there's the Kidron Valley. There's Nob, a priestly city of Nob. And this, again, the high place. This was a threshing floor. This was a place where the ark sat for a while, and the priests would meet here. That's looking south. Now we're looking east. We're looking towards the Jordan River, viewed from the same place. You can see how you're looking down. Here's Gibeah. That's where Saul would have been born. Ramah up here. This is where, another name for it, but that's where Samuel was born. Whoops, wrong way. And this is now looking north. The remains of the city of Gibeon. This is 5.6 miles northwest of Jerusalem, modern Ramallah or Ramah. And this again is the high place of Gibeon. This is that high place. Looking to the south of the high place of Gibeon, we can see the remains of the city of Gibeon and the top of the hill called the high place. Okay, and that top of the hill is right here. All right, so that's where Solomon's going to go and ask. And God's going to say, what do you want? He says, wisdom. Solomon divides the nation, the 12 tribes, into 12 districts. Instead of 12 tribes, they're divided into districts. And Solomon's now setting up his administration. His kingdom, Solomon's kingdom, expands this far from, again, the Gulf of Aqaba, the river of Egypt, not the Nile. It's just like David had left him. Solomon, in the first 2 years, so between 970 BC and 950 BC, he's going to start building. He's got plans from his father David. David apparently also collected material to build the temple, but he's going to build the temple and a palace. He's going to get logs from Lebanon, the great forest of Lebanon, the cedars of Lebanon, sail them down here to Joppa, and then drag them into Jerusalem. Now, what's interesting, if you don't mind, I don't have time to go into all this. I shouldn't do this, but there is, when a place is burnt or destroyed, not everything is just nuked. Not everything is torched. There's always going to be remains of things, like remains of lumber, remains of sheetrock or blocks or something. And there, some of the stuff that has been reused for many years, the stones or the rocks have been reused. And some things burnt, you know, like in the Babylonian fires, the temple was burnt, but some of the timber was preserved and then used by Nehemiah when they returned, and then used again by Herod when he rebuilds or expands the temple. And some of these logs from Lebanon have been found in this the mosque right here in the roof, and you can see them and stamped. Some of them I think we saw inside the Golden Gate, or the Eastern Gate here, down inside, because when you get up on the Temple Mount, you can look down into it, because you got to go up through stairs. And they were inside there and on the side, and they burnt them. The Muslims were burning them at different times, because they give a credence to the fact that they've been dated and they're very old. So some of these timbers still possibly remain. Again, that's not a guarantee, but they are ancient timbers that are still in the ceiling. Anyway, he builds a temple. Now, if we go back and talk about what we had before, this is looking from the city of David. Can you see this? You're in the city of David looking north up at, right there's the top of Mount Moriah. There's the Mount of Olives over here. Here's the Kidron Valley. And this is where Solomon's going to build his temple. David would be looking from here, from his palace. There's Mount Zion over here. Here's the Hinnom Valley. Comes down this side and turns. So this represents, again, the wall. See, this is the temple up here. And it sits on the bedrock. But it's like this. If you want to say it this way, it's a bedrock like this, and this is the threshing floor. This is where Abraham offered Isaac. This is where David was at when the plague stopped. This is what he purchased, and this is where the temple is going to stand, and this is where the Dome of the Rock stands, because you can see the bedrock right here. Can you see the bedrock over here? Well, not anymore, because what they did, they built a retaining wall. Solomon built one first. The Hasmoneans going to add on to it. Herod's going to extend it. So this is nothing more than a retaining wall, meaning you're just expanding it here like this. So you've got a nice flat surface, and this is now called, now you're on the Temple Mount. But this is the actual part that's on the rock. Now, that is why if there's ever an earthquake, like there's a tremor, this part, that's why they've had to refix this in this mosque. I almost remember the name. I just forgot it. Sometimes it shakes, then they have to rebuild it. And you can see the timbers in the ceiling, because this right here is not on rock. This is the southern wall of the temple of Herod. This is the eastern wall of Herod. This is the eastern wall of the Hasmoneans, and now you're getting up into the eastern wall of Solomon. And so that was Solomon's Temple Mount wasn't this big. I should have a picture of this on the television for everyone to see. But this right here is simply just building a retaining wall. And then the Temple Mount is right there, but the rock is, or the temple is going to be sitting on the top of the mount. So if that makes sense, I hope. So this little dotted stuff, that's all fill to support that. Here it is again. This square is Solomon's platform. That would be Solomon's retaining wall. The temple is going to be built right here. This is all going to be flat like a big parking lot. And the temple is going to be here. When you go into the temple, the Ark of the Covenant is sitting right there. In fact, Lean Rittmeyer has got pictures that he can identify the size and where the ark would have sat. They would have carved a flat place for the ark to sit, and Lean Rittmeyer has identified that. Now, we can't go in there and look at it because the Muslims will not let that take place. Now, do not get confused, but this is the retaining wall of Solomon's platform, and his temple is going to stand. Another building will be standing inside of here. This would be his west wall of the Temple Mount. This is not the west wall today, because the Hasmoneans took it down this far. In 165 BC, they extended it a little bit further south. See, they had to build it out and then put fill in here. And then Herod wanted a little bit further, so he ends up more in 19 BC, but he also takes it out to here, out to this side. This is still not the western wall. These are underground. This is mostly underground. And then up on top of this is going to be the things that you can see, the pretty stones. In fact, if you go down here, and I've walked along here, these stones aren't finished. They're cut. They're in. Some of them have a boss around them. Some of them still have a bulge on them. They're not even trimmed. But these are left over. In fact, there's one down here in the tunnels that fell from the construction of the wall up here, fell down in there, and you can still see it sticking out. Nonetheless, today's Western Wall, people go and look at the Western Wall, touch the Western Wall, pray at the Western Wall. They're standing right about here above ground on what would have been a wall up here during Herod's time. No one is touching this wall of Herod's except for, but you see this right here. This was would have been Herod's, excuse me, Solomon's retaining wall and the platform. Herod then expands it further north and a little bit further south, as did the Hasmoneans. Now, there's the temple. Now, that temple is a building standing here. So you see, this is like very big. This is a building like this. And that's just a drawing of Solomon's temple. There's the altar of burnt offering. There's the bronze basin. Inside here would be the table of showbread. There's several of them here. Lampstands, several of them. And then there'd be an altar of incense. And then there'd be a curtain. And then there's the Ark of the Covenant. Solomon's going to build this. Here's again, this is from the top, the same thing I showed you. There's the Ark. That's the temple. That's the temple right there where the Ark is inside. This is the square wall, the retaining wall that Solomon built around the rock on top of the mountain. So this is his platform. The platform you see there in that picture goes from Herod's north wall all the way down to Herod's south wall. And here's his south wall right here. And you can still see some stones. And if you look at the Jerusalem book, you can date them. And those are Herodian stones. But what I want to show you is this, just because it's cool. You see this retaining wall right here. That all got knocked over by the Babylonians, and then it ended up being rebuilt over. And there's a model of it. Now we're looking from the Mount of Olives at the east wall, the eastern gate or golden gate, the temple. And then on the other side is the west wall. This would be Solomon. This would be 70 AD. So this would be from the New Testament time period. That's a close-up of Herod's temple. That's the New Testament. But right here, if you're still with me, this is that line of Solomon's wall, the square retaining wall. This is added on by the Hasmoneans and Herod. And Herod added on up here. This is Herod's west wall right here, the retaining wall. Then a west wall was built up there to go around the Ark of the Covenant, or around the temple. But this place right here, these stairs going up to a platform right here, this right here, you can still see, and it was right here. This wall of Solomon's wall, you can see the top stones right here. Now you're in the, you've got to know what you're doing. And there I am pointing at it. That's me pointing at it right here. This is Solomon's west wall going right down here. Platform steps go up to, now there's a platform, and that's where the Dome of the Rock is right here. But you see there's several things taking place here. They're using this as the first step up onto this platform step. So that's the top of Solomon's retaining wall. So Solomon was building this in 970, 950 BC. See those right here? That's that west wall, top of the west retaining wall. And that is this wall right here. Or we go back to this right here. It's this wall right there. Those are stones from that wall buried inside there. And you can still see the top of them. Now, that's just cool. I'm sorry. That's just cool. I just showed you that. Okay. Now, Solomon builds from 970 to 950, and he has built a magnificent temple, done a lot of work. He added on a palace like, you know, the wisest king in the world would build. And he has spent a lot of money. He has spent a lot of things on credit. Hiram from up north has sent these from the Phoenicians, has sent down logs, and Solomon's got to start paying these debts off. And he ends up right here, you can see this in 1 Kings 9, 10 through 4. Solomon gives King Hiram 20 towns up here in northern Galilee, right up through his border. He goes, great deal, I'll take that territory, those towns, I'll put them in with mine, and I'll help pay for your timber. So Hiram, the king of the Phoenicians, goes out, looks at it, and called the land Cabal, C-A-B-U-L, which means, translated, good for nothing. You have given me, these are 20 run-down ghetto cities. There's nothing here. And he says, this does not pay your debt. And so he got into conflict with the Phoenicians. He's going to, well, right here, Solomon goes into debt to Hiram. Solomon builds cities and with forced labor. He's going to people are going to have to be slaves to help build all of it. He's going to build Gezer. He's going to build a six-chamber gate. Megiddo, he's going to build a six-chamber gate. Hazor, he's going to build a six-chamber gate. You can see them in all three cities. I've got pictures of all three of those. He built these cities up, and he's doing it by going in debt and forcing people. Everyone's got to do their part of working. And so now between 970, 950, he's building. He continues to build, but now he's in debt, has to force people between 950 to 930 to build for him. Taxation is out of control. He started with a kingdom of peace and has worked it into, he's in debt, crazy in debt. And that's going to lead to all kinds of problems. Now, Solomon then sends out search parties, searching for gold. He's going to go all the way down into Egypt. He's going to go down. The gold of Ophir is down here. He's way down here into Egypt looking for the gold of Ophir. He's down here dealing with the Queen of Sheba, trying to find gold, spices, something. He's frantically trying to make money. He is crazy in debt and is taxing the people, not just with forced labor, but with great expenses. Solomon then dies. And that's what's being said right here. You can look on page 110. Middle of the page, it says Solomon's downfall is caused by the many foreign wives. His downfall is not caused by a woman. That's a misspeaking. It's caused by marrying foreign women. Not just one, but many. But not just many Israelite women who follow Yahweh, many women who follow other gods with other philosophies. He's marrying, you know, a couple communists, a couple socialists, a few atheists, some that worship Baal, some worship this god. It's like, and he's got a whole harem full of false ideology and false religion, and he ends up building temples for them. He gets into the temple of to Yahweh. He even builds the temples for some of their gods on the Mount of Olives. If you can imagine David's son Solomon building temples for his wives, he marries Pharaoh's daughter. The wives of royal birth brought into Jerusalem pagan religions and false philosophies, which misled Solomon. The Lord was angered. Jeroboam, one of Solomon's best craftsmen, one of the builders that built, was overseeing the building and cutting of stones for the temple and the palace. Jeroboam is chosen to be the replacement for Solomon, or at least cause him confusion. So Solomon is going to have a son that's going to be, and the prophet Abijah does this to him. Rehoboam is Solomon's son. Jeroboam is Solomon's craftsman, his chief foreman. I'll show you some buildings he built. He's going to build the golden calves. But Solomon, Abijah comes up and tears a garment and gives Solomon, gives Rehoboam the pieces of the garment and says, you're going to receive these 10 kingdoms. Solomon is going to be given just two. Now, this is all prophesied. And so when Solomon dies, Rehoboam becomes king. And the people come to Rehoboam, Solomon's son. And I think I've got that written down. Yeah, right there, bottom, second to last paragraph. When Solomon died in 930 BC, his son Rehoboam was to be the king of the united 12 tribes of Israel, as David and Solomon had been. Jeroboam rose up against Rehoboam, asking for freedom from the harsh labor and heavy taxes placed on the people of Israel by Solomon. Rehoboam rejected Jeroboam's request and threatened the people of Israel with harder labor and more severe taxation, 2 Kings chapter 12, where Israel replied, what share do we have in David? Meaning, okay, that you're Judah. We all have our own tribes, and we're rejecting David and his tribe. To your tents, O Israel. Look after your own house, O David. You're on your own. We're out. And they started their own government, the northern 10 tribes. And that is where we have right here. Jeroboam is going to go north. He's going to set up a golden calf at Dan on his northern border and a golden calf at Bethel. And again, notice Shechem is right here between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. That's where Shechem is at. That's going to be important in a moment. Bethel, another city, is going to have a golden calf and a shrine right here for Jeroboam. And Rehoboam is left with just the tribe of Judah, tribe of Benjamin, and the people of Simeon that live in the land of Judah. Now, up to the north, this is the temple in Dan, the golden calf temple that Jeroboam built. He was in charge of building the temple and the palace, overseeing the construction. He was the chief foreman, the chief builder. This is, right here, you see the platform? See that we got the retaining wall? There's the platform where the golden calf stood. This is in Dan. This is where the altar would have been. That's not the altar, that's just a wire metal image. And then there's steps coming up here. So that is, and look at these stones. I'll show you the stones. This still is there today. There was a shrine like this in Dan in the north and on the southern border at Bethel. And this is there today. This is where the golden calf stood. That's where the altar stood. The temple courts were out here. Here's another image of the way it would have looked. Over here, there's rooms for storage and priestly chambers. Over on this side, there's still remains of those chambers. Again, the guy that built the temple for Solomon built this for the northern 10 tribes because of Rehoboam, and Solomon had worked the people in the tax. So you got your hero who becomes the villain, whose son tries to be more of a villain, and finally the chief foreman just bolts and says, we're out of here. I don't even understand. And he first thing he does is change their whole history. Jeroboam rewrites Israel's history, and I'll read it to you in a moment if we hurry. Okay, there's Tony standing on the steps. The steps right up here, there's steps coming up here, up to the altar and to the platform, and that is what Tony's doing right there. She's standing on those steps. The golden calf would be here. Now, those steps are from 930 B.C. Those steps, the altar would have been in front of that. There is the steps going up to the platform where the golden calf was. The altar's over here. Look at the stones. Look at that. And here's how it's all locked together here, the chain connected right there. I'll try and do this right here. Those are built by the guy that built the temple, and those are built in 930 B.C. And there it is, the steps leading up to it, the front steps. Here's the altar out here. Go up to the golden calf. There was a temple like this in Dan in the north and Bethel in the south. There it is again. There's just a close-up. I just couldn't get enough. It's like, oh, my gosh. And just sitting out there. I mean, just sitting out there in wide open. But this is called the boss. This is the margin. And it's just like Herod's stones, this is they've got a frame around called the ball. Okay, that's enough of that. I can talk more about that if we wanted to. Now, this is the city of Dan, the city gate going into the city of Dan. And interestingly, there was found in this gate an inscription from the Syrians or the Arameans. Syrians, Arameans are the ones that live just to the north, like Damascus and that area. They right here, they come down, they put up a plaque in this gateway of the city describing right here, it says, talks about the king of Israel and the king of the house of David, how they have been defeated. They're mentioned there, and the house of David is mentioned. And so you've got an inscription with David's name right there in an inscription from, I don't have the year on there, 841 B.C. 841 B.C., they're talking about David on an ancient inscription. And it's right there. It was mounted on the wall there as people came into the city. That's where the king would sit and have judgment. That's outside the city of Dan. There's that picture again. All right. That's, again, the city. This is where the house of David's stele was found, right here on this wall where it had fallen down. And this going in, the temple's to the other side there. All right. That's enough of that. Here we go. Now, we have several kings. This is 930, and we're not going to talk about the kings of Judah, the sons of David and Solomon and Rehoboam. That's going to be a continuous line. That's next week. We're going to talk about, these are nine dynasties. The first one is Jeroboam, the guy that builds the temple that worked for Solomon. He has a son, Nadab, that's going to be killed by Baasha. Baasha then is going to have a son who's going to be killed by Zimri, who's going to be killed by Timni, who's going to be killed by Omri, who's going to now build his own capital city of Samaria, right by Shechem, between Ebal and Gerizim. And that's Omri. And this is going to become the first long dynasty. That's Omri, Ahab and Jezebel, and then Ahab's two sons, Ahaziah and Joram. That's going to be very evil. This is now Elijah's time. Elijah's going to confront this group. Notice, so far, they've all been killed. And then Jehu is going to be anointed by Jonah, sent by Elisha, and Jehu is going to be anointed, and he's going to attack Joram and kill him, and then have Jezebel killed, and he's going to set up, and he's going to have a dynasty of five generations. he is himself has his image. He's going to deal with Shalmaneser III and is going to give him tribute, and he's going to be carved in an image. We'll look at that. That's another dynasty. That's the sixth dynasty. Then Zechariah, his son, great-great-grandson, is going to be killed by Shalom. And now we're down to he's going to reign for 1 month. And now they're going to fall in 721, and now we're in 750. So we're within 30 years. And Shalom assassinates Zechariah, who gets assassinated by Menahem, who has a son named Pekahiah, who gets assassinated by Pekah, who gets assassinated by Hoshea, who then is taken into captivity by the Assyrians. So you can see that's how the kingdom ends. So you got 20 kings, 9 dynasties, 6 assassinations. And that's what we're looking at right now. Now, just to compare this, this is the kings of Israel we just looked at, ending in 721 B.C., These are the kings of Judah, David's sons and grandsons. See, Rehoboam, you recognize him, that's Solomon's son, has a son named Abijam, Asa, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, Ahaziah, and then Athaliah for a little brief time period, Joash, Amaziah, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and during Ahaz's time right here, that is when Israel falls. During his reign was 735 to 715. So this is when the Assyrians are arising. And Ahaz has to deal with the Assyrians, as does Hezekiah and Isaiah. But now, when Hezekiah is king, there's no kingdom to the north. There's just a Syrian border right there, and Hezekiah is going to deal with them. Hezekiah Manasseh, who gets taken captive by the Assyrians, now this is next week, gets a hook put in his nose and drug off. He has a 50-year reign. He has a son named Ammon and a grandson named Josiah who brings revival. And then Josiah's got some sons, Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. And now they're the Babylon captivity. This is what we're looking at right here. Hopefully I can move through this. Now that's the king, Jeroboam, the north, Dan, and Bethel, the golden calves right there. During this time period, we're looking, this is just 1 Kings, you know, the time period, and what's important about this is 970, and these are the books, Joel, Amos, Hosea, Isaiah, Jonah, Micah are all taking place during this time period. We'll look at that. Here now, we go through those kings. If you look, if you would, on your book, so you got a page to see this, you go through on page 112. I've got the names written down. You can see you've got that chart. I just showed you the kings of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, the first one being Jeroboam, 22-year reign. And we got that first paragraph, talks about what Jeroboam does, but he gives his kingdom to Nadab, his son, who then is killed. Baasha then reigns in the capital city of Tirzah. The capital city in Israel is not Jerusalem in the north now, it's Tirzah. And Baasha reigns. Baasha's son Elah reigned after next in the city of Tirzah, but he was gunned down or cut down by Zimri. Zimri is going to be king for 7 days, and then Zimri is assassinated by General Omri. General Omri shows up, and General Omri is going to begin, in a sense, the first dynasty, if you want to not count Jeroboam, only had 2 people. But General Omri kills the king, and General Omri is going to become king, and he's going to have a son named Ahab. And then he's going to have 2 sons that are going to become king after him. So this is 1, 2, 3, 4 generations of kings here. Ahab is going to marry Jezebel, the Phoenician princess, and so she's going to bring in Baal worship. Baal worship is the god of the storm, the god of fertility. His wife is Asherah, however you want to say it, Asherah. And Asherah is the goddess of fertility. Baal is the god of rain and fertility. So by worshiping these, Jezebel is teaching Israel how to be prosperous and fluent, prosperous and fertile with all that they have. And this is when coming from the other side of the Jordan, walking in from Gilead, is a prophet named Elijah who says, it's not going to rain again until I say so. And everybody laughs and laughs and laughs. And then after 3 years of no rain, it's like they're hunting for Elijah. Where is this guy at? So that's where we're looking at right here. We go down that page. Talks about Baasha, Zimri. We got killed by General Omri. Omri begins the fourth dynasty. It's a 200-year dynasty. Now, if you look on page 113, there's a nice map that shows you one of the things that Omri is going to do is, because Omri the general, in his when he was killing the king, Timni, he burnt the city of Tirzah, just burnt it down. And so he's got to form a new capital, so he's going to make Samaria his capital. And you can see Samaria is on the map there, Omri's new capital, right there beside Sechem. In fact, when you go to Sechem today, you can see Sechem right there between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. I've showed you pictures. Samaria, you just walk, and all of a sudden you're in Samaria. It's the same place. It's like West Des Moines and Waukee or something like that. Anyway, that you see where Tirzah's at? Tirzah's just to the right of Sechem and then Samaria. So that's going to be Ahab's palace, and that's where all the things are going to take place with him and Jezebel. And that's where Elijah's going to walk in to that place right there. I got some information there about Baal and Asherah there in the middle page. Elijah's going to come from Tishbe, a village on the other side of the Jordan. That's the bottom paragraph. And he said, there's what he says, 1 Kings 17, verse 1. He says to Ahab, this is a B right there, not Ahab, as if you're actually trying to figure out what I'm writing. He says to him right there, 1 Kings 17, 1, as the Lord, the God of Israel, as Yahweh, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain for in the next few years except at my word. Eventually, they hunt for him, they look for him, and eventually he's going to meet him at Mount Carmel. He's going to go up there and meet at Mount Carmel. There's Samaria. He goes up to Mount Carmel, says, I'll meet you on Mount Carmel. And they take all the priests. You know the story. They take all the priests on Mount Carmel. And this is, we are standing on the top of Mount Carmel. Okay? We're on the top of Mount Carmel. The Mediterranean Sea is to our back. And way in the distance over here is the Jordan River. But we're looking at the valley. This is the valley of Armageddon. This is the valley of Megiddo. This is the Jezreel Valley. This is the airport. See those runways right there? That's the Israel Air Force runways. So it's right there in the valley. So it's a nice place to travel. It's the Kishron River runs through here. There's, if you look, see this is a valley going this way, like a V going this way. The hill country goes up this way. Hills go up this way into Galilee. There's Mount Tabor. There's Nazareth where Jesus grew up. And right there, like we talked about, that's where they try to push him down. In the distance, there's Mount Moriah, and there's Mount Gilboa, where Saul died. There's a city there called Jezreel, right here. There's in Herod. That's where Gideon's men were tested. 300 men got down and drank water like this, looking up. The other men got down like a dog and just stuck their face in it. He sent those guys home. That was in Herod at the pool right there. And there's the city of Jezreel. Elijah's going to meet with the prophets like down here, somewhere on the side, not necessarily at the top, could have been. But he would have built his altar here. They would have had all their altars. And they're going to have fire come out of heaven. They're going to call on Baal. And Baal, remember, is the god of fire. He's the god of storms. He's the god of rain. Asher's the god of fertility. They're all starving because there's no food. There's no rain. Elijah then has a bunch of water brought in and dumped over his altar, which, where are they getting this water? I thought they were having a drought, but he brings up a bunch of water. And while the Canaanite prophets of Baal, not the Canaanites, but the prophets of Baal, they're Israelites, prophets of Baal, they were cutting themselves. They're crying out. And Elijah's just mocking them. And it's recorded. I got it written down here. Just making fun of them, mocking them. And when they finally get exhausted from their dance routine, imagine doing your dance routine just over and over and over again. And finally, they can't even dance anymore. Just think about, you know, pagan rituals and stuff. I don't know. Sometimes you see it in religious activities today. And Elijah just steps up, and after he made fun of him, he just says, well, he prays to God and says, show the fire, and he comes out and lights up his altar, burns up all the water, and then he has all the prophets executed. Now, it wouldn't be hard because they're exhausted from dancing all day. And then as soon as he does that, he says, you better get going, Ahab, because you're not going to make it back to Jezreel. Who's reigning from there up here in the valley, and that's where Jezebel's at. And he says, you're not going to make it. And it started raining so hard that the chariots had a hard time making it back. And that's what you have right there. Now, in the middle of page 114, Queen Jezebel's only response is to threaten Elijah with decapitation. So Elijah gets scared. And one of those weird stories, he gets scared after calling fire out of heaven, slaughtering all the prophets. He says, oh, Jezebel's going to kill me. And he flees to Mount Sinai to talk to God and feel sorry for himself. And God is not impressed with Elijah's self-pity and sends him back to do three final things. Now, we could talk about what's going on there. He says, you've got three things to do. And he's got to anoint a king, a new king Syria. I'll say Syria. You're going to have a new king of northern Israel, and you need to have a new prophet for yourself because you're done. And I'm not sure if that was, it's just your time is up, or okay, I'm going to have to get a replacement. You'd have to read that and read into it. Aram, Syria, Aram. I always get confused because I'm saying Assyria. Plus, I'm talking too fast. So he does that. So those are three things he sends Elijah back to do after he meets him on Mount Carmel. And that's after Mount Carmel, and he flees to Mount Sinai. So this is Mount Carmel looking down. Notice right here, Jezreel. They call this the Jezreel Valley. There's also a city down here called Megiddo. And so they call this Megiddo Valley. And Megiddo is on a hill. So it's called Har Megiddo, the hill of Megiddo. So when you say Har Megiddo, that is the word Armageddon. And that is on the, like Jezreel's on the valley here. Har Megiddo, or the hill of Megiddo is on the valley. So this is called the Valley of Har Megiddo, or in English, in end time studies, the Valley of Armageddon. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean this is going to be the place of the final battles? I mean, it means something. Something's going to take place. Apparently, Napoleon stood here during his invasions of different places. He says all the armies of the world could do battle right here at the same time. They could all meet here. There's enough room for you to maneuver in Napoleon's view. That's his view. Okay, here's the same picture. Here you go. I put a couple pictures together. Nazareth, Mount Tabor, Mount Moriah, the Ramat David Israel Air Force Air Base, Jezreel, the city, Megiddo, the city, and Mount Gilboa, and this is the Jezreel Valley seen from Mount Carmel again. This is Tony with a little sign for me because I can't remember everything, but I took the picture. This is the, now we are in, viewed from Jezreel. Now we are in, if you care, we are in this city looking across this way. Here we're looking from the west by the Mediterranean Sea towards the Jordan. Here we're on the south side looking towards Nazareth, up towards Galilee. And that's in this picture right here. We're in Jezreel. Mount Carmel's on this side. The Jordan River's on this side. We're looking across the Jezreel Valley from the city of Jezreel, where Ahab's wife Jezebel was waiting, and where Ahab fled back to. There's Nazareth on the other side. There's Nazareth, Mount Tabor, Mount Moriah, and that's Tony looking across. That's the valley. Notice how green the crops are and stuff. It's a fertile place. So that's why they liked Baal. They needed Baal because Baal would keep it produced, keep it fertile, until they turn against Yahweh. And Yahweh says, "Oh no, Baal doesn't control the rain. I control the rain, and I'll tell Elijah when to call for it." And he did that day. Well, this is where Elijah flees. Now, I've got Mount Sinai. This is before I switched my up. I think Mount Sinai is over here on this side. This is from the 80s. But he flees. That's 250 miles. And now he returns. And the first thing he does when he returns is finds a new prophet. And he gets that checked off his list. And he replaces himself with Elisha. Elisha is the new prophet. And he starts training Elisha at Abel Mahola. That's where his home is at. The next guy, he's going to replace Ben-Hadad with Hazael, is going to be placed, is going to become the new king, and he's going to go anoint him. The one thing he doesn't do is anoint a new king of Israel. And then as we go on, Ben-Hadad and 32 kings besiege Samaria. That's Ahab's house, or his palace, his throne. Ahab recovers and defeats Ben-Hadad at Elijah's word. Elijah meets him and says, you got to go back and fight him again, and God will be with you. So now, if you read through the story here, man, there's so many good things here. We are in, bottom of page 114. We'll maybe need to pick this up next week. Are you guys okay? I mean, I don't want to. Like I said, this could drag out for years. I've done it for years. The bottom of the page, Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, invaded Israel and besieged King Ahab at Samaria. Right here. Coming out of the Arameans, Aram, Syrians, attacked Samaria. Now remember, the whole time we're doing this, okay, let's put this in perspective. This is the northern 10 tribes. The whole time we're doing this, we've got a storyline going down here in the tribe of Judah. We've got the sons of David. There's a whole other line. There's a whole other part of Israel happening down here with all those other kings. So this is just half the story. And they're being invaded now by the Arameans. And that is Ben-Hadad comes down, the king of the Syrians, the Arameans. And he invades, let's watch this. He invades King Ahab at Samaria. This is King Ahab with Jezebel, who lost all of his prophets on Mount Carmel. He's following Baal. And Elijah's trying to get him to turn back to God. And Ben-Hadad demanded all of Ahab's gold, silver, and wives and children be sent out to him. Okay, he surrounded the city. Send me your gold, your silver, all your women, and all your children. So Ahab does this. Okay, whatever, just don't kill me. But Ben-Hadad, I mean, does that sound like something David would do? No. But Ben-Hadad then, once he got all the women, the children, the gold and silver, demanded that he be allowed to come into the city and be allowed to take whatever he wanted, like, you know, the iPhones, the, you know, smartwatches, and, you know, go through the refrigerators. Ahab was dismayed, but the Lord sent a prophet to tell him that Ahab would attack. If Ahab would attack him, he would win. Ahab listened to the prophet, his advice, and went out and attacked and drove off Ben-Hadad. But when Ahab overcame Ben-Hadad and captured him, he allowed him to live in exchange for a place in the Aramean market in Damascus. So he captures this enemy, and now he can take everything back, but he says, hey, you know what? I'll let you live if you let me in on, if you take tariffs off our products and let us sell in your marketplaces in up north in Aramean, in Damascus. The Lord was not pleased and sent the prophet to rebuke Ahab, saying, you have set free a man I had determined should die. Therefore, it is your life for his life, your people for his people. 3 years later, before the next battle against Aram, God calls a council of angels. You can read this in 2 Chronicles 18. God calls a council of spirits, angels, and says, what should you do? How do we lead Ahab to his death? One said this and one says that. Finally, one, and God rejects the ideas apparently. Finally, one of the spirits says, I'll go and be a lying spirit in the mouths of his prophet and I'll lead him to his death. And God says, go, you'll be successful. And so God sends a lying spirit in the mouths of his prophets and misleads Ahab. And the demonic spirit is offered, okay, and then what ends up happening, Ahab has surrounded himself with, okay, Ahab follows the false advice and is hit with a random arrow before the battle even begins at Ramoth-Gilead. Ramoth-Gilead is on the other side, and so he goes in the battle over here at Ramoth-Gilead, and he captures Ben-Hadad. That's the one he captures, Ben-Hadad. Now he goes off, and a random arrow hits Ahab and pierces through his armor. It wasn't even aimed at him, and he's the only one that gets killed. And then, now, you're going to have Ahab's sons coming up here. And what you've got coming up now after Ahab is Ahaziah and Joram, his sons. We'll pick this up next week because there's some great things are going to happen. Ahaz is going to fall off his deck and hurt himself. He's going to send messengers down to Ekron to talk to Baal-zebub at Ekron. But Elijah intercepts him, comes from Gilgal. Elijah's hanging out at Gilgal. Sound familiar? And comes up and meets him and says, go back and say Ahaz is going to die. And then Ahaz says, what? That's bad news. So he sends out, he says, Elijah's sitting on a hill over here by Gilgal, and Ahaz sends out a messenger and says, we're going to kill you. And Elijah calls fire out of heaven, consumes them. The second group comes out and says, we're going to kill you. Come back. Ahaziah wants to see you. Calls fire out of heaven and consumes them. So there's charred bodies in two piles, and a third group comes out totally scared and begs him not to call fire out of heaven, and that's Elijah. Now, Elijah is now taken up to heaven. Elisha is left, and Elisha's got one main thing to do. He goes to the school of the prophets, Bethel. Let's see, where we got right here? Yeah, Gilgal, Bethel, and Jericho, the school of the prophets, and then... I want to get to the place where a prophet, it appears one of Elisha's students, which is Jonah, goes across and anoints Jehu to be the king. And Jehu is the one that ends up dealing with Shalmaneser and ends up on obelisks and things in the British Museum. I'll pray out of courtesy. to you and end this class, and we'll pick this up next week. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for the details you provided us. We ask that we would, in our own days, consider your presence, consider your direction, consider your morals and your ethics and the things you want us to do, that we would be able to share the truth of your presence, to share the truth of your creation, but most importantly, be able to share the truth of your salvation through Jesus Christ, that we may, again, walk in faithfulness to you and be productive at this time in history. We do thank you for this account, the words of God, and asking that we would handle them diligently and let them penetrate our hearts